Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puranamunina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusandhami Bhagavad-gita bhavad-dveshini. So we'll chant the first three verses. We're on the second one. Repeat of 16. Shri Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Abhayam Sattvasam Shuddhi, Abhayam Sattvasam Shuddhi, Jnana Yoga Vyavastatihi, Jnana Yoga Vyavastatihi, Danam Danam Danascha Yajnascha, Danam Damascha Yajnascha, Swadhyayastapa Arjavam, Swadhyayastapa Arjavam, Ahimsa Satyam Akrodha, Ahimsa Satyam Akrodha, Tyaga Shanti Rapaishinam, Tyaga Shanti Rapaishinam, Deya Bhuteshwalo Luptvam, Deya Bhuteshwalo Luptvam, Mardavam Hri Rachapalam, Mardavam Hri Rachapalam, Te Jakshama Tritishyaucham, Te Jakshama Tritishyaucham, Adroho nati manita, Adroho nati manita, Bhavanti sampadam daivim, Bhavanti sampadam daivim, Abhijatasya bharata, Abhijatasya bharata. So in verse 2, where we left off was is with akrodaha. Krodha means anger. Sometimes the word krodha says maybe a little bit more specific meaning in this context here, but krodha usually comes with kama. There's actually a group of three. Ajnanam or vidya means ajnanam, ignorance. Leads to kama, leads to desire, leads to krodha, leads to anger. You can even make it a little longer. You can say, ajnanam or ignorance leads to kama, is the cause of kama, which is the cause of raga dvesha, right? Kama is in the form of really, you could say actually kama is in the form of the raga dvesha, positive and negative likes and dislikes. And that leads to krodha when it's thwarted, when any desire is thwarted. But here, Swamiji takes krodha as anger, a krodha, sort of freedom from anger. It's not a question for a mumukshu, you know, or somebody who's coming to this knowledge or becoming mature in this knowledge to be free from anger. A jnani can be free from anger. Somebody who's, you know, mature, has worked through all of the repressed anger or unconscious anger can be free from anger. But here, really, a krodha is the ability to resolve one's anger, to have the capacity to resolve the anger. And so when the anger arises, how do you handle it? One thing Swamiji is talking about, which is interesting, I don't know actually where he picked this up. He does talk with a lot of psychologists, including myself and several other of his students who are psychologists and NFTs and whatnot. But when he's looking at this krodha and the resolution of anger from kind of a cognitive psychology viewpoint, where what he's talking about is, and I think it's true, it happens so fast in your mind that you don't always notice it, but any krodha, any anger that arises in the mind is accompanied or is caused really by a thought. That thought can be triggered, but the thought and the anger can happen almost simultaneously, so the anger overwhelms the thought, so you don't really even remember or realize what is actually accompanying that angry emotion. And so how Swamiji deals with this is, if you, when you have that krodha, if you can sit with it and try to take it back, you know, rewind it a little bit, rewind it to see what is actually the thought or the trigger to the krodha. And by recognizing the trigger in the form of a thought, you can neutralize it. And that neutralization of the thought itself neutralizes the krodha. And he uses, and we'll see when we get into Shanti, which is about two from here. There's something in India, it's a technique that is, I don't know, thousands of years old. It's in the Shastra, it's in the talked about in the commentaries, called Pratipaksha Bhavana. Bhavana means an emotion or an attitude, right? Pratipaksha means bringing in the other side, bringing in the opposite. You know, like if when we say Purvapaksha Siddhanta, remember this word Purvapaksha? Mm-hmm. Paksha means wing. Pakshin is a bird, one who has wings. So Paksha means a side, right? Prati means the opposite side, right? So it's like if you have the Pratipaksha Bhavana, means bringing in the opposite feeling. So for instance, if something or someone is making you having a reaction towards someone, it's working on that relationship with that person or with that reaction by seeing something which is opposite to it. Mm-hmm. Does anybody say you there's something about a person that you dislike, but there's always something that you do like. There's always something positive. And so it's trying to neutralize the reaction by bringing in another viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And that actually, that Pratipaksha Bhavana, and that's understanding that the emotion itself is always connected to something. Emotion doesn't just arise. Even if the emotion is arising very quickly out of the unconscious, it's related to something. And so to work with the emotion or to resolve the emotion or to resolve the anger, you have to get back to the root of it. When I was doing Jungian analysis, my analyst used to say, you know, and I teach this to my clients also, you know, when you have a reaction, it's nice to just ask yourself, what is this really about? You know, what is it really about? Mm. And you can address your unconscious when you say that. What's really bothering you with this? And your unconscious, if it trusts you, it'll just tell you, well, it's really about this. Mm. I'm really upset about this. This is what it is. And it's such a beautiful question, because what it does is it takes the projection off the person and gives it back to you. And then you can go in, the buddhi can go in and deal with that aspect of the manas, or that aspect of the unconscious, in a way that will resolve it. Mm-hmm. It's like taking the projected anger and bringing it back to yourself and then dealing with it where it really exists. So Amaji tells the story in his commentary. I hope you're all reading these commentaries, because they're really good. He tells the story of he was on a plane with, he was just on a plane ride, and some man in one of the seats asked for a particular drink. Could I have this drink, a Coke or something? You know? Right? Remember that? And so the waitress, you know, the stewardess, brought the wrong drink. And so this man blew a fuse. He was furious. He was furious. And he just later, you know, up and down. And the Swamiji said, you know, he was a guest on this plane for 2 or 3 hours. You know, she would have been happy to bring him the right drink. The anger had nothing to do with her. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with the drink. It had something to do with an anger that was already there. And so when you think about it, really, when anger is a huge emotion, you know, it's a huge emotion, and it's usually loaded, you know. It's usually something that's inside. So in other words, it's like the anger is already there, and this just becomes a trigger that allows for its expression. And so what needs to happen is you need to get a little bit of space. You need to work with it so that you can get a little space and recognize really the initial thought that's triggering it. If you can recognize the initial thought, there's a little space between you and the huge reaction, and you can resolve it. But you need a little tiny bit of space to resolve it, or else it's already there. Then you have to resolve it in a more major way. But there's the possibility of resolving it as it arises, but that requires catching it, you know, catching it and then working with it and bringing in sometimes opposite viewpoint, which is what we call Pratibhaksha Bhavana. We'll work with that a little bit more when we do Shanti. But here this akrodha is something which is a resolution of an anger which has occurred. Right? So akrodha means resolution of an anger that's occurred. As we'll see later, there's another one, kshama, that we're getting in the third verse. Kshama is really the freedom from the anger even occurring. That's just one step behind the anger. But with akrodha, it's the ability to resolve the anger that has occurred. So that's akrodha. Tyagaha. Tyagaha is another word. The next one, tyagaha, is another word for vairagya. Vairagya means dispassion. And vairagya is actually a very positive word. It's not a negative word. The tyaga, when you say tyaga or renunciation, you have to be careful when you're thinking about that you're not thinking of, you know, this is something to be kept away from me, as though there's something wrong with it. That's not it at all. It's the freedom. Tyaga is the freedom for something to be in, to come into your presence and to leave. Means that non-clinging, the Buddhists would call it as non-clinging. You can accept it while it's here, that's fine, and you can accept it not being here also. That's renunciation. That Swamiji always uses the helium balloon. You know, the helium balloon for a child is much different than the helium balloon for an adult. The thing to understand with tyaga, it does not thwart or cut off your joy or your ability to enjoy, your ability to deeply relate, to love, to care, the normal emotions. It's not about cutting off the emotions. It's about being able to have those emotions, you know, to love and to be engaged, and to be absolutely free to let things leave also, because things come and go by nature. And so it's actually being very realistic. Tyaga means that you have a good grip on reality. Because honestly, enjoy the things that are present to you and allow them to go because they will go. Allow them to change because they will change. And so giving Ishwara that freedom. It really is giving Ishwara the freedom to be Ishwara. You know? Or looking at the universe as Ishwara instead of as something which is designed, which will, when it's in a particular way, will make you happy, and when it's not in that way, will make you sad. That's absence of tyaga. Tyaga means I can be with what is and be objective and be interested in it. And when what is difficult, I can be objective and try to help. I think that's one thing that I know in the years of with Swamiji, you learn certain things because of how he is. And one of the things that I've always found beautiful, really, is that when things are difficult, you know, it's how can I help? That's the vritti. How can I help in this situation? Right? That's much different than becoming the victim of the difficulty. Mm. There's no victimhood there. So if this is a difficult situation, how can I help? This is an angry, hurt person. How can I help? This person is very angry at me. How can I help? Mm-hmm. You know, that's so much different. It's objective. And my own shanti isn't at stake in that type of an attitude, you know. And he is that. So he's always been a role model in so many ways. But in that way, it's very beautiful. It's just, this is a problem. What can we do? What should we do like that? So that's a beautiful quality of tyaga, and the ability to love and to let go also. Mm. Yeah, to love without clinging. Why I stress that is because a lot of times renunciation has a negative connotation, like it's something you shouldn't get near. That's not really renunciation. Mm-hmm. That thing, you're very attached to that in some way or another because you can't be near it. You know, there's a story, Swamiji really makes fun of this story about Ramakrishna not making fun of Ramakrishna, but making fun of his student who told the story as though he was praising Ramakrishna. I don't know anything much about Ramakrishna, but anyway, this is the story that the student told, is that the student wanted to see or test Ramakrishna to see whether or not he really had vairagya or dispassion toward gold, toward money. And so what he did was he slipped a gold coin under Ramakrishna's mattress, thinking that, wondering what would happen. And so, as he tells the story, Ramakrishna was not able to sleep all night. He could get no sleep. Something was really disturbing him. Yeah. And what was disturbing him was the gold that was under his mattress. Now, why would the gold under his mattress disturb him? There's no reason at all, right? There's no reason at all. But the thinking was this. If you have vairagya for something, then that's something that must be kept away from you. And if you bring it into, this is a misconception, right? If you bring it into his presence, then he would be very disturbed by having this gold in his presence, because he has no use for gold. He doesn't need the gold at all. And so if the gold is in his presence, that would be terribly disturbing. So this was what whoever was telling the story was telling it with this type of a buddhi, you know? You're probably making up the whole story, actually. You know, so Ramakrishna, he couldn't even sleep. He couldn't even lay on his bed because the gold was there.
So it's a great jnani.
He's a great jnani because he could not stand to be in the presence of money, in the presence of gold. But you know what? I totally understand that story, because that renunciation and vairagya and all of these has that negative connotation. None of these things, you know, should be in my presence. It would be the same like saying for a man, and there's some books, I think there's one book called Vairagya Shatakam. For brahmacharis or for sannyasis, a woman, beautiful woman, should not come into their presence. Right? Because it's too upsetting, you know? And so, until they get really control of themselves, you know, that woman should not come near them. A gold coin, for somebody who loves the gold coin, that gold coin should not be brought into the presence, because it would be very upsetting, and it's something that you just have to keep away from you. So this is an interpretation of vairagya. Or for a person who has a vairagya, anybody can come into your presence, or any object can come into your presence, and you can leave, and you're fine. Right? There's not an issue there. And so that's why when you understand that vairagya is not positive or negative, it's free. Vairagya is freedom. It means you can be with Ishwara, you can be with the creation as it is. So it's a beautiful... Vairagya is something wonderful. It's not something that makes you strange. Peculiar. It makes you free. And another way to think of vairagya is that you actually have perfect vairagya toward probably 90, 95, or if we take the whole universe, it would be 99.99% of the entire universe. Or what do you want to say? 98% of your life. You have perfect vairagya. Right? There's just a handful of things where that isn't true. So our life, you know, our life is very disturbed by a few things. But by most things, we have complete freedom. You know, we can appreciate the thing as it is, and if it comes and goes, we have that certain objectivity. We can have love and appreciation and care and all those types of things and be totally free. But then there's a few things where that's not true. And those are the areas where we suffer. So, tyagaha. The next one, shantihi. Shantihi means peace, a mind that enjoys peace. Peace means that quiet relaxation. It's not just relaxation. Relaxation, though, I like the word relaxation, in that the mind is not stressed or tense. It is a quiet, peaceful, absorbed mind. That mind is very natural when you're not projecting out into the world, when you're not caught by a desire. Right? So the way that your mind is between desires, you know, so there's no raga dvesha and the likes and dislikes and then the reactions that I need this to be happy. When that state of mind is not there, if you're not held by that state of mind, I need things to be like this in order to... Negative is also the dvesha. I need things not to be like this in order for me to be happy. That's the dvesha. The raga is I need this in order to be happy. That in order to be happy is what makes a desire a desire. That's the full desire template. If I want this, but if I don't get it, fine. That's like a burnt seed. It's like a it's called a dagda bija. Bija means a seed. Dagda means burnt. It's a burnt seed. Mm-hmm. That karma doesn't sprout into any type of, you know, any type of kroda or hurt. Because if it's a karma, oh, I'd love to have that. That would be beautiful. Oh, I'm sorry, you can't have it. Oh, it's fine. It doesn't matter. No? Or, oh, I hope that doesn't happen. I'm sorry that is happening. Oh, well, okay. It's okay. Your shanti is not disturbed. That sense of peace, that all is well with me, from the standpoint not of the self. That's always the case for the self, but from the standpoint of the antakaran of the mind, that shanti is what we're talking about. And so now, there needs to be, for that type of shanti in the mind, a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Accommodation and lack of judgment. You have to, as Swamiji, when he's writing about this one, he's talking about, say my mind is restless. He uses the example of restless. My mind is just always restless. It's not sitting comfortably. And so that's how my mind is at the moment. It's restless. And then you say, oh God, my mind is so restless. I just have this restless mind. I don't know what to do with my mind. It's so restless. And so I don't like a restless mind. I would much rather have a quiet mind. And so my mind starts perseverating then on the type of mind it is at that moment. Or you have a particular thought, you know, like somebody comes along and you think, oh, not that person again. And you think, and you think something like, why did I have that thought? Why would I have a thought like that? That thought isn't very kind. You know, that's not a very good thought to have. Why did that thought come? You know? So that's judgment. It means that there's an observing ego that is commenting on, positively or negatively, all of the things that come through your mind, all of the thoughts that come through your mind, all of the conditions of your mind. And Swamiji's point, which I think is so very, very freeing, is like, you don't know why thoughts rise in your mind. All kinds of thoughts come in your mind. They come and go. And so why not just let them come and go? Why do you have to analyze all of this associative thinking and all of these things you're passing through? Why not just let the mind be the mind? And then when you need to use it, use it. And give it time to just be the funny mind that it is. I think I've told this story so many times, and Swamiji said, once he was talking about the mind, he was talking about something like this, some similar idea about shanti. What difference does it make, these thoughts that come and go? My mind has all kinds of funny thoughts. It doesn't mean anything. So the mind's acting like this, or it's having associative thinking, or it's, you know, wondering about this or feeling about this. It's scenery. What makes you think that you have to own these thoughts? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to own the thoughts. These thoughts are passing through. You can let them pass through and be scenery. And then you pick the thoughts, you know, if there's certain thoughts you want to own or certain thoughts that you want to work with, like say thoughts are passing through and you get some sort of an emotional reaction. Some type of thought triggers you and have emotional reaction. Well, there's something to do with that thought then. We can work on that thought. That's where that pratipaksha bhavana comes in. And what's that reaction really about? What is really hurting me? What is really bothering me? And then I can work with that. I can be with that. I can bring in opposite thoughts. There's a lot of different inner child work. There's so many things I can do. But then I'm dealing with it. I'm dealing with something that needs to be dealt with because it's a reaction that's taking place that I would like to work on. It would be like if my arm had a bruise or something. Why not take care of that? If my mind has hurts in it, why not, in the psychological unconscious hurts, things that are being triggered, why not deal with it and be with it in a way that is helpful? But all of the thoughts that are passing through, just the associative mind, I mean, the mind thinks on its own, it dispels, it cleans itself out, it has its own ways of taking care of itself. So why not just let it do that? Let those thoughts pass through as long as the mind is available for me when I need it. And so that means that even on the level of my thoughts, there's not a judgment, there's an objectivity. A little out here, there has to be that objectivity also. Instead of a judgment, it's, the judgment's not really helpful. You know, what does a judgment mean, really? This person is like this, this person is like this, and that is good or bad. You know, what this person is like is obvious. You know, this person is angry, or this person is upset, or this person is whatever words you use to define the situation. But if the attitude is, "Oh, how can I help?" is a lot different than casting a judgment. And you'll find if you're judgmental out here, you're judgmental in here also. Yeah. Really, as it is outside, it's an inside, and as it is inside, it's usually how it is outside. Sometimes it's much worse how it is inside. Yeah. And so that shanti takes, I think the shanti is very natural if we get rid of the judgment. If you get rid of the judgment, then you can be helpful. Yeah. I like that as almost as a mantra, kind of, how can I help? And that how can I help should be internal as well as external. And then the mind feels safe also. People feel safe. The world feels safe. And your inner world feels safe too. If the attitude of the buddhi is how can I help, rather than I don't like the way you're behaving. You know what I mean?
Critical.
Yeah, rather critical. If you have an inner critic inside, it's hard to live. Just like if you have an outer critic, it's hard to live in the company of that person. You're not free. Because there's somebody always criticizing you. There's somebody always criticizing you inside also. You're not free. You can't relax. You know? It's not fun. So that's the shanti. The next one is apaishunam.
What?
Apaishunam. Paishunam is gossip. Paishunam is when it's really caused by gossip itself is caused by your own, I think, insecurity. But paishunam is instead of talking about the good qualities about someone or people, I mean, that's fine. That's always nice to notice the person's good qualities or their strengths. But when you're harping on their negative qualities or what's wrong with them, you know, it's poisonous, really. It's poisonous for you, and it's poisoning you, and it's also poisoning the other person that you're talking to about. Say you're talking to one person about another, and you're talking about them in a negative way. Right? So that's kind of that's a poison. You're passing a poison. And so that type of gossip, which can relieve you for the moment from your own insecurities, you know, or whatever your own inner problems are, it can kind of push it off to the side for a while, and you can kind of put everything on that other person. There's a certain pleasure that you can get out of gossip. Really. there's kind of a pleasure because you can, the two of you can conspire against this other person that brings you somehow closer, and you get to get rid of some of your stress and tension and worries, you know. But it's a false pleasure. It's a false pleasure because it also leaves you in a paranoid condition. Because if you're going to gossip about somebody else, it is damaging. That's one thing to understand. It's not pretend. Gossiping is damaging because it does spoil the mind of the other person. That other person has to wash that out. Or somehow the person who's gossiped about has to be strong enough to overcome the stain that's been put on in that other person against them. So gossip's really a damaging thing. But it's damaging for you also. Because if you gossip about somebody to somebody else, there's a whole cascade of things that happen. One is that you will worry that that other person will find out that you've talked about them. That's one thing. Another thing is that that person that you've gossiped to about so-and-so will also not really trust you because you've gossiped about somebody else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now you become, and you know all of these things. Mm-hmm. You tend to push that aside when you're gossiping, but you actually know these things. And so then you're put in a paranoid and weakened condition. And so gossiping is something that as you mature and overcome it, you're very relieved. When you just you just wipe that out, you wipe that gossip out of your value system. Your value system is stronger than the urge to gossip.
It's almost about making yourself feel better by putting the other person down.
Yeah, and that's Swamiji talked about that too. It's also can be used to assuage your jealousy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's all kinds of things about it that really don't bless you at all. But there's something also, it's an escape valve. And so people easily fall into it. There's something pleasurable about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the pleasure is momentary and it leaves you in a dark, dark space, actually. So you feel much, when you overcome it, when you overcome this gossiping tendency, you feel strong inside, strong and clean inside. So it's a worthwhile practice to do. One time when I was in analysis with this Jungian analyst he's passed away several years ago, but I dearly loved. He was really a wonderful man. But I remember him one time, he was talking about gossip, and he said, "I really like to gossip." But he was saying it in the sense that there's something juicy. Mm-hmm. There's something juicy and pleasing about it, you know. But it's got a really dark side.
What do you mean by gossip? What
gossip is when, like you and say a friend or somebody, you're talking about old Joe Blow over here, and for some reason he's the victim. He's somebody that you don't like. He's done something to make you angry or whatever. There's something about him you don't like, and so the reasons you don't like him or her usually aren't analyzed. Usually, you know, that's usually not analyzed. And so what you end up doing is just ragging on that person to somebody, you know. And there's a certain release and pleasure from the release, like pressing a boil or something. There's a release or pleasure in ragging on that person because for some reason, for whatever reason, there's some sort of jealousy or in some way that person is stopping you from having something that you want or whatever it is, you know. And so there's a tendency, that tendency to gossip is there. People do it all the time. They do it it's a pastime. It can become a pastime among people, especially if they don't have TV and other things to watch. they talk, okay? It's just something that happens. But you pay for it. I'm just saying your psyche pays for it in many ways. And so if you catch yourself with that, Which we've all gossiped, I'm sure, I certainly have. And I remember going through the process of eliminating that, especially when I was at the course. You know, and we would do Mounam and all of this. And then we kind of learned. And because it was a value that we were talking about. And then you realize when you're doing that, and you make decisions along the way not to do it. And as you make those decisions to not have that be part of your life, there's a strength that comes from that, you know? Because it's not that we're not all subject to it. Everybody's subject to it. But it takes a consciousness and a commitment and a value to pull away from that, you know? And then you feel clean and strong inside, because you are. And people also trust you, because you don't engage in that way. And if you don't engage in that way, you won't get engaged in that way toward them either.
Mm.
You know? Mm. So that makes for a stronger person, and it makes you feel better about yourself. The next one is Daya Bhuteshu. Daya is compassion. And compassion toward all beings.